Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. In our pre-show conversation, David and I started talking about different healing modalities, and I know we've talked about this topic in before, but we were kind of taking it in a different route that we had not mentioned before. So, David, what were you saying at the very beginning that started this whole conversation into healing and being attuned?
We were talking about how there was a guest on Psychic Viewpoint podcast that I like to listen to who does theta healing. And when she was talking about doing theta healing, we were talking about just the modality of theta healing. You were talking about how you had looked into it a while ago, how you had said that you had looked into the possibility of it, and you said it was kind of like a car wash for your soul kind of idea. Then I had said to you that what I find interesting in all the modalities of healing and of energy work, as it were, because with all these things, you have theta healing and you have Reiki and you have angel therapy and all these different modalities, and you can usually see the R with the circle around it, you know, at the end of the name of it. And my thought, and I kind of read this and it resonated with me, is that healing modalities and being attuned to them is really a matter of just opening yourself up to the belief and the truth behind the healing, that a lot of the times that the rituals and the modalities are, like you said, it's kind of like, you know, it's like I think of Wiccans, and Wiccans are very, the Wiccan practitioners I know are all about the rote. The rote is extremely important. If you miss a step, you really could miscast a spell. And my idea is that it's really more intention-driven. And you said that there were, I'm going to let you carry it about when you said there were very, that in some modalities you think that there are specific requirements.
What I was saying is I agree with you. The first thing that to have happen when you're learning a new healing practice, especially in energy work, is to have the intention to be open and to be open to it. And what really upset me a little while ago is I started hearing people online and talking about Reiki and saying, oh, you don't need to be attuned to do Reiki. Reiki is love, just, you know, send love to people, and that's doing Reiki. And to me, that is a very big misconception of what Reiki is. Because to me, Reiki is a very specific frequency, and when you're attuned to Reiki, you're attuned to that specific frequency. If you want to send love to people, yeah, that's fine. That's all good. But when you start calling that Reiki, that's when I start getting upset, because just sending love to somebody is not Reiki. But sending Reiki to somebody is also love and energy. Mm-hmm. And so what we're talking about is, I believe with certain specific modalities and techniques of energy healing, you do need to have that attunement where your frequency is attuned to the frequency of that technique specifically. Kind of like I can go and rub somebody's shoulders and back and everything, and like, I'm giving you a massage. But there's a lot that I don't know that a professional massage therapist does that would make them rubbing your back and giving your shoulder rub much different than what I do. And if I call what I do massage therapy when I haven't been trained as a massage therapist, not only is that illegal, but, you know, that's there's a lot that's missing out from that. I see that kind of along the same way with specific types of healing modalities that require attunement. You can't just say, oh, I just intend to send out theta healing therapy, and so that's what I'm going to do. And have you been attuned? No. Have you taken any classes? No. Well, how do you know how to do it? I intuited it. And I don't want to downgrade a person's intuition. I think that's the main thing. It's just your frequency, your tuning fork needs to resonate with the tuning fork of the healing energy that you want to practice.
Oh, and I don't disagree with that. And I know exactly what you're saying. You're saying that you can't say, I'll just send love, because that's the same thing as sending Reiki. when, you know, it's kind of one of those, you know, not all psychics are mediums, but all mediums are psychics.
Yes.
So I can send love, but that's not necessarily sending Reiki. But I can send Reiki, and that is sending love. Mm-hmm. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
Now, here's the thing about that is I'm going to use the Wiccan parallel here.
Okay.
If you are taught to be a Wiccan practitioner or a believer or whatever you want to call it, I don't want to offend anybody because I'm sure there are Wiccan listeners, and I have great reverence for Wicca and Wiccan practices. But if you learn Wiccan spellcasting or divination or whatever you want to call it, and they teach you, you need to learn the specific rote and the specific step and the specific thing. You have to have each one of the elements present. You have to have the circle protection. And if you miss any of those steps, something could go awry. Just a belief in the idea that you can miss a step could potentially make it go awry. But is it that case because you believe it, or is that case because it is a reality, or can you even differentiate between the two?
See, I think that goes back to the what you said at the very beginning, where the very first step to doing anything is having an intention to do it and a belief that you can do it. I was a practicing pagan for a couple years, and not Wiccan per se, but when
like
you...
Earth magic pagan?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, just okay. General pagan.
Okay.
General pagan, Greek Parthenon area, just, you know, general... Oh, hey, gods, sure, why not? Lord and lady, all that good stuff. Anyway, but if you want to learn how to do Wicca the way that Wicca is done, then after you have that belief and that intent and you start taking action, I believe that whatever you are taught, that is what is attuning you to that certain frequency of that belief system. And if there's something in a belief system that says if you miss one step you could really screw things up, you know, then that will be in your back of your thoughts, in the back of your mind, especially at the very beginning when you're starting to, you know, cast circles and write spells and whatnot. And so I believe that could be part of a self-fulfilling prophecy, like what you're saying, where there's an intention, but there's also a doubt or fear. And that's why in some circles, they hold the athame or ceremonial dagger, you know, up to you and say something along the lines of, to paraphrase, do you enter into this circle without fear or doubt? And the reason why that is because if you bring in fear or doubt, then you can sabotage a lot of energy that's being sent up there. So to a large degree, I believe that, yes, it is a matter of intention. And if your intention is strong enough to overcome your doubt or fear, then you'll probably be okay for the most part. If it isn't, if you're more consumed with your doubt and fear than with your intention, then you probably shouldn't be in a circle.
Well, a doubt and a fear in and of itself is an intention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
If you think about it. But I think with the rotes and the rituals, I think they're focusing tools. For example, with the idea of going through a particular rite or spell or focusing. Like when I was, okay, I'm going to stop.
Okay.
Because I'm throwing six words in a barrel, mixing them around and pulling them out in different orders. And so
okay.
I'm saying, so I think it's like what, and you know, if you just, and by the way, and back, so let's try this over again. We're going to do the rewind. What I think it is when we have a set of instructions that we follow, and we say that these need to be followed to the letter for this to be successful. Number one, I think what we're doing is we're elevating and amplifying our belief. If we believe that we go through the steps in order without missing a step, we're magnifying and really locking in that belief stronger. It also is a method to make sure that we are very careful and focused and deliberate in the steps we take as a focusing tool in and of itself. if you're doing things very meticulously and very carefully, it's kind of like soldering a component on a board, or maybe even doing surgery or something like that. If you're very precise about it, you're focusing to make sure that you're precise and that you do everything right. Like a surgeon. A surgeon has to cut just a certain amount. It's very meticulous. You do it long enough, of course, surgery becomes very second nature to you and you don't think about it. But I think that's the process of it, is to get you into that kind of almost an automatic way, or just almost to where you're doing it unconsciously, where you're really doing it rhythm and you're letting just the ritual take over. That it's putting aside the left brain and the critical mind so that the right brain, the intuitive, can come into play, and the intuitive can do the work, can do the heavy lifting to make things real and make things manifest. And I think healing energies and modalities work that same way. Now, I want to say that I agree that you can't just say, I'm going to attune to Reiki, boom, I'm attuned to Reiki, because if you don't understand where Reiki's coming from, because every Reiki practitioner works a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there's so many different versions of Reiki. There's angel Reiki. There's
crystal Reiki.
There's crystal Reiki. There's DNA Reiki. There's theta Reiki. There's puppy Reiki. There's all these Reikis. I don't know.
Yeah, anymore. I found, I think, 1,500 of them one time when I was searching online a few years ago, like back in 2004, 2005. I was like, 1,500 different styles of Reiki. Wow.
Do they all work?
I don't know.
But you've got to figure that they had to have worked to some degree. You know, so I'm sure there's people out there going, I tell you what, and they open up the side of their coat and they're like, I got a nice collection of Reiki treatments here. What do you want? Just pick anything you want. And they're looking over their shoulder, you know.
But first one's free.
First one's free. It's on me. I tell you what, you know where to find me. But so if there's 1,500 out there, it has to have kind of taken a derivation, right? It has to have mutated. So the pure Usui Reiki, you know, of course, that's been adulterated now. It's stepped on, like, you know, the baby powder in the illicit drug thing. You know? if it works, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really that important? I mean, I understand what you're saying about litigiousness. You can't go in and say, I'm a massage practitioner and I have no license for it, and start putting your elbows into somebody's, you know, rib cage and say, you know, all better. But at the end of the day, if healing is healing is healing. And then the other thing too is that if Reiki is the end all to be all, if theta healing is the end all to be all, why are there so many different modalities, and why are there so many energy practitioners that know many different modalities?
Exactly. And being an energy healer for a number of years, I find that, what's the best way to put this? Okay, being an energy healer is like being a sci-fi fan. And the reason being is, once you learn and practice a certain energy healing, it, like what you were saying earlier, it becomes second nature to you. It's like, oh, Reiki, okay, do-do-do-do-do, and we're doing Reiki, okay. And, you know, you can actually, you can allow your mind to wander and just let the Reiki flow to and do what it needs to do without putting your own thoughts in. When you find other modalities of healing that you're interested in, like a sci-fi fan, your first sci-fi movie might have been, I don't know, Planet of the Apes, the old one, the classic Planet of the Apes. And that, let's say that was the first sci-fi movie that you ever saw, and it's like, oh, wow, that was so cool. And you watched it over and over, and you could sit there and read the dialogue as in real time with the movie, every person's part. And then all of a sudden someone says, hey, you like sci-fi, have you ever seen Terminator? I'm like, no, I haven't. So you watch Terminator, like, oh, wow, it's that first feeling of that you got when you first watched Planet of the Apes. And then you go to another movie or another show or something else, and it gives you that same feeling, but in a different way, where it, one, expands your mind to possibilities of, oh, apes evolving to, you know, take over humanity or whatever, to, oh, hey, future time-traveling robots here to take out leaders of resistance. Okay, these are things I've never thought of before. It's kind of very interesting. In the same way, energy healing, is like that with what I was talking about before, with a tuning fork of energy for the specific to a certain modality, a certain technique, such as Reiki or Theta healing. You find that, and it's like, oh, hey, that feels really different. I don't know what to make of this. I want to learn more of this. You sign up for a class, you go to a class, you learn how to do it. Like, oh, now I understand why it felt that way. The more tones, the more tunings that you get, the more notes on a piano you can play. And for whoever, whatever client you comes in with, whatever it is, from the whole gambit of human experience, then you're more adept at applying any one of those different musical notes or one of those different healing techniques to that issue. And that's better for you, for your business, and that's better for your client who is able to get the healing much quicker than going to somebody that does not have as many or that many notes.
Well, you know, here's what I wonder about this.
Okay.
I don't think there's a panacea for energy healing. Just or for any healing, with one exception, which is the idea of self-healing. And I'm going to bring this up because we talked about the lady who did the I wish I remember her name, but it'll be in the show notes, who worked with Theta Healing. Remember I was talking to you a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling you that she says that the three components that she gets beyond before she begins the healing process, she asks the person if they want to be instantly healed, if they deserve to be instantly healed, and if they believe that instant healing for them is possible.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, all healing is self-healing, period. You cannot heal a person that has no intention of being healed. If they tell you, I want to be better, that doesn't mean that they necessarily believe that, or they necessarily need to be better, or, as I would say, that they need to dispense with the function of the discomfort of the illness or the disease or whatever you want to call it. And I think about this for myself because I have a human body, so it's subject and a skewed off, sideways, lopsided belief system like everybody does. I'm sorry, with maybe one or two exceptions, literally. And so, I go through my things, and the last thing I remember having to deal with was my arm and shoulder. And there were times where a massage therapy did the trick. It boom did the trick. There were times that just plain old rest did the trick, you see. But there was also times where massage therapy did not do the trick. Massage therapy would work in one case, or medicine would work in another case. Or in this case, the massage therapy did not do the trick, but the acupuncture did the trick. Was it the acupuncture? I've gone to acupuncturists for other things, and they did not do the trick. My belief is that I was ready to try something different because I was ready to break the cycle of discomfort. So I found myself drawn to the practitioner and working with their particular energy that would help me catapult beyond it. And it might be just because I tried something a little different. That maybe that was the cue that I was ready. It was because I was going to try something different.
And for me, when I take out all the opinions, thoughts, and ego, and look at just the story, look at just the actual facts, just the facts, ma'am. I would say that we instinctively know the type of energy that we need to have healed in any way, shape, or form, and any kind of dis-ease or ailment is from something within us that is ready to be healed and making itself apparent in either our mentality, our emotions, or our body. And like what you're talking about with your arm and shoulder, that may have been a whole nother issue that for whatever reason the tone, the frequency, the musical note of massage was not able to address, and you instinctively knew that, oh, I need a different note, I need a different tone, I need a different frequency for this particular issue. Then you go out and you search that out and see what works. From your personal experience, like what you said, it could be a matter of well, I don't know why, you know, massage worked the past three times, but it didn't work this time on, you know, this physical ailment. Well, let's go look for something else. Oh, acupuncture. Why not? Oh, acupuncture worked. Okay, cool. And like energy healing, having experienced both massage and acupuncture for ailments that come up, you now have a broader spectrum of what those two techniques can do. And so I think that it's a matter of your instinct searching out the healing from your intent and your belief and your desire to be healed. That would be my take on it.
I think there is the element of the intent and the instinct and the desire. It's so enmeshed. It's so enmeshed with one another that I don't think you could separate the cart from the horse.
Hmm.
I think that I only chose to try a different healing modality because I was ready. And there could have been another time where I did all of a sudden chose the different healing modality and did not work, you see. And I think that I think our body tries. It's a conversation. I think it's, and I consider our mind and our body, because they're really the same thing with two different expressions.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a couple. Let's say it's like a married couple who starts arguing. And when they start arguing, most married couples, or most people, I should say, when they start arguing, they no longer are listening to the other person because they're like, I need to drive my point home. That is what's most important. And if I stop to listen to this person and I concede to them, I will fail in driving my point home. And I think that the body does the same thing. The body's like, I need to drive my point home right here. In fact, I was talking to a gentleman and he was having some serious back pain with the sciatica down the leg.
Mm-hmm.
And he did some physical therapy and it resolved that. Next thing you know, funny enough, the pain moved up into his upper back, and it affected his shoulder and his arm, and the arm tingled all the way down to his fingers. So the physical therapy wasn't doing any good. Nothing was doing good and any good. And then he went to the doctor, and the doctor's like, you know, he's like, I can't do anything. I'm just in too much pain. And the doctor said, well, here, have a bunch of pain medicine. And he said that the pain medicine was great, but he was not healing. It was just persistent, persistent, persistent. And he was like, I cannot continue to take these pain this pain medication. It's just not good for me, and it's just going to wreak havoc on my system. So he said, I got to find something, some way of healing. And he went to a massage practitioner who was kind of a physical therapy-oriented massage practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
And the massage practitioner said, all right, well, first thing we need to do is we need to get you off the pain medicine because to see what's going on. Got off the pain medicine, and then instead of lifting his arm over, you know, up over his head, he all of a sudden was lifting his arm a little ways up, and he said, ow, I can't do that. And he stayed off the pain medicine, and he stopped lifting his arm over his head, and he started getting better and better and better, because the pain medicine was just basically concealing the pain symptoms. Because really, pain is just, like I always say about pain, pain is just a way of saying, all right, you need to take a different course.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do something different. And most of the time, like in that case, you know, the old Henny Youngman, doctor, it hurts when I do this. Well, don't do that. I think there's so much wisdom in that. We just don't even realize that. The pain's just like, if it hurts when you do that, don't do that. But we're like, you know, we got to push past the pain. And pain is weakness leaving the body. I'm like, no. Pain is telling you to stop and do something different.
Yeah, and I definitely want to, you know, take a moment here to say we're not saying that don't take pain medication if you need pain medication.
No, I'm not saying that at all.
Because there are certain cases where, you know, people do need the medications that they have at the moment. Your friend that you're talking about at that time, not so much. You know, he wanted healing more than he wanted to have pain medication and to take away the symptoms. He wanted to actually get to the core of it, and that's what happened. So I just want to do that little disclaimer right there.
Oh, well, yeah, and I'm with you on that. I mean, there are ideas that sometimes you get in a pain cycle and you have to break it to be able to move past
it. Exactly.
But the point, really more of what I was making with the whole thing with the pain and whatnot, is that our body, when it goes into pain, it's not arbitrary. Pain is not an arbitrary thing. It's like, oh, by the way, I'm going to hurt you today. I got nothing else to do. It's not the neural, you know, pathways trying to break ennui. It's they're basically there to signal. Pain is a signal. It's exactly what it is.
So if somebody punches me in the shoulder, I feel pain. It's like, oh, somebody punched me in the shoulder.
It's a signal that you had an impact that can cause great damage. Mm-hmm. The pain is saying, all right, get yourself out of having more impact. So the tough guy's like, I'm going to take you. And then they get even more pain in more places all over their body because they didn't listen to the pain signal. And there's times, yes, there's very rare times where pushing through the pain is important. Mm-hmm. But I think ignoring pain, that's a whole other thing.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I'm talking about more than anything is ignoring pain, ignoring the fact that the body is trying to tell the mind something that the mind is not getting. Like, to me, the most blatant example is the common cold and fevers and things like that. The common cold, it's so common because in Western society, we're always running ourselves ragged and we're shitting ourselves all over the place. So what happens is the body's like, all right, slow down, take a rest. And we don't. Mm-hmm. The body's like, slow down, take a rest. We don't. And then the body's, got semaphore flags and doing everything it can. It's like knocking your knees out just to try to get you to stay down so that you can recuperate and so that your mind can shut off. Sometimes it's just the mind that needs to shut off. And it's telling the body, hey, help me out. I can't shut off because I'm too wrapped up in all this stuff going on around me.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it.
It's interesting because the weather changes to a colder time, in the winter. And you think about from taking what you just said, weather gets warm. People start playing outside more. They start having more field trips. Some go on vacation, all this other stuff. And then you hit the fall and it's like, well, I can't really stop now because I have Thanksgiving and then I have, Christmas and I have to shop for these people and everything. And then for me, I've noticed that the friends that I associate with, right after New Year's, right after Christmas or New Year's, it seems to be when most people get the most sick. Mm-hmm. Not just a light cold or a light flu, but it's like, oh my goodness, I'm out for a week because I'm just like, blah.
Right.
And I think that's because for the past 9 months, you're like, I'm out in the sun, I'm having fun, and then the fall and all that craziness with family and stress and the holidays and everything else, and then your body keeps saying, you need to rest, and you might get a little allergies or something in the fall, or maybe a slight cough or a slight sneeze or something around Thanksgiving, and you don't pay attention to it, and you just keep going. And then once all that energy from the summer and the fall and all the holidays and everything subsides after New Year's, January, February, you're like, okay, I can relax now. And the body says, okay, so now that you can listen to me, we've been run too much. We need to rest, and I mean seriously rest. I'm like, no, I still got to go to work. I still got to, do my family obligations. I still got to go here. I still got to do this. I'm interested in this class over here, and I'm interested in that. And the body says, no, I'm sorry. We're just going to, we've let you go on long enough. You haven't listened to us, and now we're going to put in a, master order of you're going to be sick for a while. And right. That's what I've noticed is that most people get the most sick after New Year's.
Oh, sure. Now, do you believe that in the Louise Hay idea that every ailment of the body is a message or a manifestation of a, I don't want to say psychological imbalance, because that implies, you're not right in the head. It's what I mean more is that your body energy is out of balance with your mental energy.
Hmm. What we talked about in episode 6 on healing, our two-part episode, I believe that everything is connected and there's a certain balance that is natural and unique to every individual between their emotional, mental, and physical state. In other words, if your natural physical state is to be more physically active and you're not, then your body is going to let you know. If your natural state is to be more mentally active and you're not feeding your brain what it needs to have to be more mentally active, then it's going to start whining and complaining. And the same with emotions. If your natural state is to have a certain level of emotional interaction or flow or feelings or whatnot, and you're not feeding that, then they're going to start coming out. So to answer your question, I believe personally that what Louise Hay says, that every ailment is something that has to do with the mental, emotional, or physical body, I would say that that is true. But
so, for example, oh, there's a but. Okay.
But this is part of my other side of my brain that is not able to fully say, well, is that true in every single case? There are certain things that come up. I'm just like, I don't know. I don't see how that is there. It's basically a contradiction in my belief system, where I believe mentally, from everything that I've experienced and have learned and know, that if there's an ailment, it comes from one of those three places. There's still the part of me that's in the general populist thinking common sense of like, well, how does that work? Well, if I don't know if it can work, then does that really make sense? Oh, isn't this just a bunch of hooey, new agey type stuff? And that, if I follow it too far down, is when I start getting into levels of doubt. And when I start getting into levels of doubt, I'm like, I have to literally say, okay, you're back at this place again where you want to choose between this contradiction in your belief system. Every so often, I do choose to play the general populist card and be like, okay, this is just hooey. I'm going to take myself out of the game for, you know, a few weeks and see what happens, just so I can have that contrast. But I always come back, and I always come back with much more understanding than what I did before, because normally when I take myself out for those couple weeks, I start getting very depressed. I start having much more anxiety. I start cocooning myself much more. To me, that is my mental and emotional self reacting to this thought process that's going on in my head. So
now let me ask you this. This is a chicken egg thing.
Okay.
Is it your mental, emotional thought process reacting to it, or is it your body imposing this? Because you don't really care to kind of do that shut up and cocoon, shutting in and cocooning thing, do you?
Not unless I really, really need it.
And how else to get you to do something you don't want to do than impose it upon you through a physical pinning down? You see what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying.
See, this is the tricky thing about, I think, about a lot of illnesses and things like that. The body is doing this because mentally we are not in a place to accept it. In fact, our body is basically saying, look, you know what? I'm going to take over because your mind's not going to do it. And the thing is the reason I think we gravitate to the idea of, well, it's all hooey and it's just, you know, da-da-da, is because our mind is saying, I cannot deal with what my body's trying to tell me. I don't want to deal with it. And I refuse to accept that that's the truth to it. Because the thing is when we have to take something on and we don't want to take it on, what we'll do is we'll find every excuse in the world not to. And when we get to a point where we have to, like, for example, let's say laundry. I'm going to use a silly one. You could say, well, you know, I couldn't do laundry because I had guests in town all week and I had to entertain them and take them all over the place. Then the laundry keeps piling up, and then all of a sudden, well, I worked overtime, so I couldn't do laundry. Next thing you know, you're wearing the same pair of underwear, you know, over again. And what's your excuse? You see what I'm saying? It's more like you've run out of excuses. Now you're kind of up against the wall. You either have to do laundry, or you risk a bladder infection. I don't know. So
or buy new clothes.
Or buy new clothes. But you're at the point where you can't deny it anymore. And I think that the pain, the body pain, is often saying, mind, you can't deny this anymore.
Yeah.
And then we turn into children and we're just like, fine. But I'm doing this under duress. I want to make noted that it's under protest. So I think there's a lot of things with the mind, and I think there's a lot of things with the energy healing, that they're both really belief-driven. I think there's a lot of belief-driven to it. And the thing is why Western medicine works so well is because we have an inherent societal belief. Because people are like, well, you know, it's proven to work. Well, if it's proven to work, because as en masse, as a society, we've said, all right, we buy into the idea of this working.
It's like the whole placebo effect. It's the placebo effect is a proven effect when doing trials, and I think the average comes out to be 1/3 of people that get better even with sugar pills and without the actual medication. And I think that goes right along with what you're talking about with not only the belief and the thought process, but the belief in Western medicine as well. Maybe it's an age thing for me, but from when I was very young, it was like, okay, here's a pill for vitamins so that you can, you know, have your vitamins. Okay, you're feeling sick. Here's a pill to make you feel better. Oh, you have allergies. Here's a pill for allergies. And it's so accepted. It's so widely accepted that, you know, oh, you have a headache. Here's 2 aspirin or 2 Advil or whatever. That if we feel pain or we feel discomfort, there's a medication for that, and we should allow ourselves to have that medication because, darn it, we don't have to feel pain if we don't want to, and if we do, we're just being masochistic. And instead of what you're saying, where if we allow ourselves to feel that pain and see where it's coming from, find the source, move through it, release that, whatever that source is, whatever that cause is, then the pain will go away on its own without necessarily having to do all these pills and whatnot. But we're so set into, oh, we have a problem, take a pill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's what has led to our kind of a pill addiction, is that we're trying to short circuit the pain signals, because I think a lot of times we don't want to change course. We want to just keep doing things the way we do it. And I think that's kind of a symptomatic epidemic as a result of that. You know, I want to be in my comfortable little cocoon little world. And I think a lot of, for people that are addicted to pain medicines and things like that, and I think that's kind of a symptom of it, is that I don't want to face what's around me. I don't want to make any changes. So, you know, my body got me to a point where I was in pain in the first place. So I want to continue the numbing effect, because now there's just a mental pain of having to deal with it rather than just the physical pain of whatever my body was trying to tell me.
Yeah, and if you actually admit that you are responsible for your own healing, then you become responsible for your own healing.
Do you believe all healing is self-healing?
In every way, shape, or form? Give me just a moment. It's all healing, self-healing.
Well, you were going down that path. That's why I asked you that.
I don't necessarily believe every form of healing is self-healing, because I'm having difficulty finding out how, if you have surgery, how that's self-healing.
You mean how having surgery is self-healing?
Yeah. In other words, if you have a surgery for, I don't know, for cancer or for fixing an artery or whatever, how is that self-healing?
It's self-healing that brought you to that place in the first place.
Oh, okay.
Let's say that you had like a blockage, intestinal blockage, right?
Okay.
There's something in your energy body, and your energy body is, I think it's combined with your experiences. You know, we can't just say it's your chemical makeup or what you ate, but I also think it's the body of experiences and your belief system. All this has kind of come to a head.
Mm-hmm.
So you have an intestinal blockage. Well, the self-healing is actually the intestinal blockage kind of coming into play, and then you figuring out how to remove it. Now, there's several ways it could be done. There are people who can do that energetically. There are people who do it with a heal with steel method, which is surgery. There's several different ways to do it. You're going to gravitate to the belief system of what works in your mind. You're like, you know, a surgery works as far as I'm concerned, so I'm going to go with surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go with the healing modality that you believe works, and it may not work. You may end up getting the surgery and then having another intestinal blockage because you haven't dealt with the true cause of it. I personally believe all healing is self-healing. I don't think that anybody can heal you if there's a function that you need to hold on for whatever reason.
When you put it that way, I understand. I was focusing just on the act of being healed as being self-healing, to me, I was like, well, the act of being self-healed, that in surgery would be the surgeon doing the surgery as opposed to you really doing anything else. But when you expanded it out into the intent of being healed and going to a surgeon, oh yeah, that I understood that much better. And along those lines and explained that way, then yes, I would say every form of healing is self-healing.
Yeah, I believe that 100%, and you have to want to. And to use an analogy, the facilitator of the class that we take on Tuesdays, he was training us in TFT, thought field therapy, the whole tapping business, mm-hmm. and a lot of it deals with phobia and emotional blockages and things. And he's talking about his fear of snakes, and somebody said, well, why don't you tap for the fear of snakes, you know, to deal with that? And he's like, because he was extremely afraid of snakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was telling stories about encountering a snake and just going completely haywire ballistic. And that was like an intense phobia. And he says, I don't want to heal that because I know that as long as I have this phobia, I'm never going to be encounter a snake in any harmful way. You see? So his fear had a function for him, and he did not want to be, in quotes, healed of it. Mm-hmm. And I think there are a lot of people who hold on to a particular illness or disease or whatever because there is a function to it. I mean, the most simple case is Munchausen's by proxy.
Mm.
Or no, actually, Munchausen's itself, not Munchausen's by proxy.
Yeah. Go ahead and for people that aren't familiar with that.
Munchausen's is when a person deliberately, very deliberately, it's not a hypochondria thing, it's a very deliberately causes themselves to be ill because the illness provides them with a certain amount of feedback. And it could be people clamoring around saying, oh, I'm really, really sorry, or it could be the focus care of a physician. It could be many, many things that there's a payoff for them to being sick because there's a response. For many people, they would see it as negative. You know, really? You want to go through all that just to get that attention? But some people, it's like the attention is so – it's such a craving, and it's a psychopathological thing that there's things that people are willing to go through for the nugget that other people aren't, and that's their nugget. Munchausen's by proxy. Usually it's a parent that's making a child sick for some whatever reason so that the child needs them. That's kind of a different scenario.
Yeah. And to me, that's one thing I have found from everything I have read through all the people that I've worked with. That is one thing that is the most predominant thing is people will do something as long as they get a payoff for it that they want. If you don't want to pay off for something, you're not going to do it. The second part of that is having it be a priority. It's kind of like if you go out and you drink to get drunk because you like that feeling of lack of judgment and fuzzy-headedness and you need it to have a good time when you're out with your friends or whatnot, then that's the payoff. That's the priority to do that because that's something important to you. Whereas other people that don't need to get drunk to have a good time with their friends, it's not a priority to them, so they don't do it. And that's it with everything and everybody. And everybody has a number of things that are a priority to them, and they will do certain things that will put themselves sometimes in precarious situations because they want to have that feel. They want to have that rush. They want to have that payoff in some way, shape, or form from what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Even like what your friend was saying, if the payoff for him to not tap for it is to make sure that he's never around snakes again, okay, that's the payoff. And that for what it sounds like is that's really, really important to him. That's a priority in his life.
Now, I do want to say this, though, okay. About the whole idea of the priority of having a certain ailment or something like that. And I think most of the cases, there is a greater function to it. But I think sometimes it goes into a higher level aspect that is, and usually when it's because of a death. I think in the higher level aspect of it, when we come to the fork in the road, we've chosen not to take it. Whatever the healing is involved, I think what this is. There's more than one thing to this, so
okay.
Bear with me.
Okay.
I think sometimes what it is like, say, a cancer, a person that is afflicted with cancer, they have an opportunity to learn something in this incarnation, and it would be completely transformative to be able to heal and go into remission from cancer, completely transformative. And I do believe that there are times where people are not ready for that transformation, and I do believe, like in the cases where, oh man, he was diagnosed and 5 months later he passed away. In those cases, I really believe that it's just that that's how they're going out.
Mm.
That it's not necessarily, the disease is kind of an expression of kind of a wrapping things up in the physical way, but it's the exit plan, I think, in the cases where it's the disease takes you really, really fast.
Because if you want to take that back to what we were talking about earlier, it's more socially and culturally accepted to die from a disease than to, you know, take yourself out by suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a conscious desire to leave, or even a subconscious desire, the subconscious desire will most likely create a disease that will allow you to meet your end. And because you probably would not be able to do it consciously. That goes right along with what we were talking about, where we have the payoffs and everything else, where if life gets too much for somebody, either consciously or subconsciously, for too long, and they're not able to break that overwhelmed cycle or pain cycle, as you had mentioned before, then some people choose to go along those routes. From what you were talking about earlier, those people probably would not be easily healed, because there is a strong part of them that does not want to be healed.
Are you talking about the short-term or longer-term illnesses?
I would think more long-term illnesses.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think of that because, like, I'll watch the mediums like, what's her name? Lisa Caputo?
Oh, yeah, Lisa.
You know who I'm talking about?
Lisa Williams? Or was it another Lisa?
No, it's not Lisa Caputo. I'm thinking of Lisa Williams. And yeah, she's one of them, but Teresa Caputo.
Okay, I'm not
familiar
with her.
She's Long Island Medium, that television show.
Oh, I'm not familiar with her. Oh, television. I don't watch TV, or I don't surf, so if I don't know the show, I don't see it.
You don't watch TV?
No, I don't have any new shows that I haven't heard from friends posting on Facebook or anything like that. So I don't surf. I don't have a TV to surf channels, so I don't hear things, and I don't read TV.
Oh, stuff. I see what you're saying. There's not a live TV. You get your entertainment from other means.
Yes.
Other venues. Oh, okay. Teresa Caputo is she's on one of the networks. She has a show called Long Island Medium.
Okay.
And she's a medium. And also Lisa Williams. We have these people that are mediums, and often they will talk about people who die of cancer. And it's usually pretty quick that it takes them. And especially it's something that, the bereaved and the survivors are saying, I wish I could have done something to have been able to caught this, to have caught that. And they'll tell them, yeah, well, you know, your loved one on the other side is telling you there's nothing you could do. This is how they were leaving.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just their exit plan, is like I say. And so I think that I think is the somewhat of the exception. If you got to find a way out, there's a million ways to die, and you just got to pick one and find your way out. You know, you like you said, you need somehow to get through the door.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the long protracted illnesses, usually there's kind of a life lesson or something in there, and it's usually an opportunity to either kind of revamp and learn a whole new lesson or not, which I don't think either of them are bad. I mean, the survivors will tell you, well, that's very painful and it is hard to go through, but I think it is a life experience thing.
There's other people that say they're in an accident and have physical ailments or whatever that they feel like, oh, that's the end of that, and that can also get down to a feeling of not being able to do as much as they were able to before, so they don't feel like they're as much as a human being as they were before. And that can just lead to a progression down into a lack of confidence, depression, all this stuff that probably over a number of years, if it's not addressed or found another way to work with it, can lead to an exit strategy as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's how we define ourselves. And I think that if we choose to not redefine ourselves, we'll probably take an exit plan. And I think it's that crossroads in life. And I don't, you know, I think that sometimes your death point, your exit plan is a moving target in life for some people, not everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's depending on what you're here to learn. And I think that you can move out your death date if you completely redefine your identity. Like, for example, Jackie sees it all the time in the nature of where she works, but there are women who are not able to have children, and they never, ever, ever come to terms with that because they've defined themselves as a mother one day, or they have taken on the society's definition that you're not a complete woman until you've had children. And there's other women who'll say that. You know, I never knew what it was like to be a woman until I actually gave birth to a child. And so they succumb to this whole idea of the identity being tied up with parenthood. Mm-hmm. And it eventually just eats them away, where there's an opportunity in their life. The life plan is there's a reason that they don't have children is because so they could experience life in this regard. And if they allow themselves to, then they can kind of move past the thrust of whatever the ailment is or anything. I think there's an allowing, there's a letting go. Like you said even earlier with illnesses and diseases and maladies, is that when you can surrender to it, when you can move through it by just releasing to it and allowing it to be what it's going to be to teach you what it needs to teach you, then you can grow from it. It's like the only way out is through.
Yeah, and that, for a lot of people, is very difficult to do because it's shining a spotlight back on yourself and oftentimes on a aspect of yourself that you have not paid attention to for a long time, or you've hidden away for so long that you don't want to see it because you've never wanted to see it because you consider it something that is very ugly or negative or bad. Mm-hmm. And to actually shine that spotlight on it and focus on it and work through it, that is not easy for a lot of people. I know a lot of healers, myself included, sometimes you just run into something that you're working on yourself and you're like, oh my goodness, are you kidding me? Like, wow, I feel, believe, think, or whatever it is. And you're like, that surprises me. Wow. And then, then the choice becomes like what you said, especially as a healer, do you choose to address it, work through it, move through it, or do you choose to pack it away for another rainy day?
Well, some people, it's easier to deal with physical pain than emotional pain.
Oh, yeah, because physical, that goes with the whole perception of reality. It's a lot easier for people to, put their hands in front of them and say, oh, this is me. I have fingers. I have hands. Or, see, I can slap my face in the head. I feel that. I know that this is real. Where it can be just as real for someone to have emotions like, I feel anger. Oh, that's real. Prove it. I can't show you my anger except through my physical body.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good illustration right there. So what I would say we do is we take ourselves a chill pill on the topic and then get a good night's sleep on it.
A chill pill on the topic and then...
It's my cute, fancy way of wrapping up the episode.
Oh, okay. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I didn't. I tried something there, and I don't know how well it fit. Yeah, it's like the old, what do they call those corsets of the turn of the century?
Oh yeah, I think
it kind of seemed like a good idea, but my internal organs got all smushed together.
The hourglass feel where hips come out an inch or two from your intestine. Oh, you should think pictures of those are just disturbing.
I know, right?
And I think most
those are people who are willing to go through intense pain for the payoff of, in quotes, beauty and fashion and style.
Exactly, and people still do that to a large degree too.
Oh, sure they do. Absolutely.
All right, then. I guess my final thoughts on the whole topic is it is amazing how much stamina and how much strength people actually have when they choose to get themselves healed and find the healing. And I believe that what we're talking about with the beginning, there are so many different ways to heal that you can, just by intending to heal somebody, you're sending them healing energy, kind of like if you want to pray for somebody, that's sending them healing energy. If you want to do that, that's fine, but don't confuse praying for somebody to be using Reiki for somebody just because it's popular.
Well, you know, and I'm going to close it with this.
Okay.
Based on what you were just saying about sending healing to somebody and love and all that other stuff. I had read once and I thought this was so beautiful. Yeah, I'm not a Bible guy necessarily, but I kind of love the Master Jesus' way of going through life. It was a beautiful way of looking at things. And the question was brought up about instant healing. Well, if all healing is self-healing, then what was Jesus doing? Because he was healing people left and right,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Well, the idea there was is that when Jesus was performing the miracles of healing, what he was doing is he had this profound ability to enable people to see the beauty and the God and the love for themselves within themselves, because I believe that ailments and all that other stuff is just basically the one's perspective of oneself in conflict.
Mm.
And I think that when we refuse to see the divinity of ourselves, that's when we start manifesting things as illnesses and ailment and all that other stuff.
Gotcha.
And I think that he was able to help people and allow people to basically see their own divinity, and that's what created their instant healing.
Ah,
I think that sending people love does that to a degree as well. That's why I always think that there is healing in doing that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I agree completely.
Yay!
Very good. So David and I would like to take this opportunity to thank all of our listeners who have been with us since the beginning or the middle, or maybe this is just your first episode that you've listened to, and we hope you've enjoyed it, and we look forward to bringing you a new one.
And if you like this episode, we've got tons more. We've got over 50 episodes out there of a myriad of topics. What you could do is you just go to TakeTheRealRedPillPodcast.com, or you can even find us on Facebook. If you go to Facebook / TTRP Podcast, like us there, and you can actually listen to our episodes right there on our Facebook page as well.
And you know what I just remembered?
What's that?
You reminded me of a few days ago. This is the date when our first podcast went live.
Oh, this is our 2-year anniversary date. That's right.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, happy anniversary, Donald.
Oh, thank you. Happy anniversary to you. So, Cotton, right? That's a 2-year
anniversary? I think it is Cotton, yeah. I think there's a pair of tube socks coming in the mail for you. However, I've got to warn you, I loved wearing them while I did, but they don't fit my feet anymore.
Oh, you cracked me up, David. 2 years. And here we go for maybe 2 years more. We'll see.
Yeah.
We never know. You know, 2012 is coming up. Who knows what happens there? But that's a whole nother episode.
That's a whole nother episode. That's right.
All right. So for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, I'm Donald Dalton, wishing you a most beautiful healing experience.
And I'm David Deere. Be well by believing you are well.